It's hard for me to say I'm sorry.
This hour of the program, maybe it's very hard for many of us to say I'm sorry, and we're going to talk about why it's so important to say I'm sorry, and maybe even more importantly, what you need to mean when you say you're sorry. And we're going to ask if men and women, if there's a difference among men and women when it comes to saying I'm sorry. Our guests say that problems in close relationships have been associated with a wide range of negative psychosocial issues like distress and depression and physically elevated blood pressure, immunological problems. The identification of effective approaches for addressing problems in close relationships, for being able to express I'm sorry, is therefore, they say, a very important public health issue. And it's what we talk about this hour, in addition to listening to a lot of songs that had I'm sorry in them, and most of them are songs about romance and relationships and people hurting someone and then wanting to say they're sorry and figuring out how to do that. It's amazing how many songs have that kind of theme. We thought, well, this will make a very interesting conversation, and we have so many Facebook comments from you, and we'll read some of those during the course of this hour. We'll be welcoming phone calls for our guests as well. Our guests are Gilbert Parra. Gilbert's current focus is on forgiveness in families, and he's trying to better understand how family members can reconnect following emotional injuries when a family member through actions or inactions has caused other members of the family hurt, emotional pain. He is a research scientist at the National Research Institute for Child and Family Studies at Boys Town, and in the fall will begin a faculty position in the Marriage and Family Therapy Program at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. Gilbert Parra, thank you very much for being with us. Should be a great hour. Thanks.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, our pleasure. Jarrett Lewis is also joining us, and Jarrett has been working with Gilbert, and he has been working on understanding the influence and function of apologies in the facilitation of forgiveness and the repairing of close relationships. He's right now enrolled in a PhD program in clinical child psychology at DePaul University, and we thank you so much, Jarrett, for being with us. Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thank you. So you've looked at the wide range of literature, and I'm so glad you've done this, because when you think about it, this not being able to express sorrow, actions that you have can make another person really feel terrible and can have all these physical manifestations also for the victim, that you can be in really bad psychological or physical shape as a result of something that was said to you. So I think it really is an important public health issue, which you've identified as such, right, Gilbert?
Yes, yes. And I think that the more and more we're learning about kind of relationships, the more we realize that we all do things that kind of hurt the people that we're closest to, and we also are all hurt very often by the people that we're closest to. And in many relationships, that they kind of have a way of kind of working themselves out, but in kind of more and more, we're starting to understand that there are certain relationships in which there kind of needs to be a little bit more in terms of kind of facilitating that reconnection between people that love one another.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea at all, Jarrett, how often we do express, and it's warranted to express, an apology? How often we do that, or do we frequently not say we're sorry?
I think it depends on a number of factors, and so that's something that we sort of highlight in the paper, is that we need the research sort of that should follow this paper is really should be targeting what characteristics of both the transgressor and the victim sort of make an apology successful. And so one thing that you mentioned sort of in the intro was gender. And so one of the main studies that we cite about gender differences says that women actually apologize more frequently than men, and it's sort of due to their lower threshold of what needs an apology, so what transgression actually constitutes sort of an apology. But once there is sort of an agreement both for men and women that something deserves an apology, then those differences sort of go away. So I guess that we could, how frequently we do it is probably more tied to those characteristics of both the victim mm-hmm. and the transgressor.
But women feel as though they've been the victims more often than men, don't they?
I think it's got to do with more of just their perception of what deserves an apology. And so I think that they have, like I said, like a lower threshold for certain events sort of requiring an apology than men.
Mm-hmm. To add a little bit to that, I do think we need to be a little bit cautious in interpreting those gender differences, because, as you mentioned, this is a really small literature, and we actually know very little about apologies in close relationships. And the studies that have looked at gender differences kind of combine friendships as well as romantic relationships and family relationships. So I think, you know, as we move forward, it'll be really important in looking at gender differences to kind of look at different types of relationships.
Mm-hmm. What deserves an apology?
That's a really good question, and I think at the heart of the matter for me, I'm a clinical child psychologist, and my interest in this has come from kind of working with lots of kids and families who've been in a lot of kind of emotional pain. And one of the questions I kind of continue to kind of ask myself as trying to help these families is, how do people kind of get past kind of emotional hurt and pain, especially when that hurt and pain was caused by somebody close to them? And so for me, what kind of facilitates or what necessitates an apology is someone who is kind of feeling lots of hurt, lots of anger, lots of sadness because of the actions or interactions of somebody that is close to them.
And I know that in one of the exercises you do, you had people keep a list of how often, or somebody, the literature you reviewed, a list of how often during a day, the three times that you said that you were sorry, or to look at a diary for 12 particular days and find out when you used those words. Uh-huh. That seems like a lot to me to say I'm sorry three times a day. Is that the norm? Or am I not saying I'm sorry enough?
Oh, no, I think you're right on target. That was a really interesting study that kind of is probably one of the better studies that's been done to date. And I think that highlights one of the things that I think we really need to understand a little bit better about apologies is the severity of the transgression or the kind of the hurtful experience. I think that, you know, we're kind of very common for saying the words I'm sorry in kind of our day-to-day interactions with other people, but kind of when do we truly mean it? And I think apologies are most effective or most important when we've kind of severely kind of hurt somebody, especially those that we're close to. So I think, yes, we use that, I'm sorry very often, but I think it becomes more meaningful and more powerful and more important in the context of our close relationships when something we've done has hurt someone close to us.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we should go over these. You talk about these five common components of an apology that need to be expressed if it's going to be most effective. Can you outline those for us?
Sure. I think, so this is basically on our summary and integration of the literature. Now we sort of come up with these components that we think are most sort of contribute to a successful or an effective apology. And so the first one is sort of an acknowledgement of wrongdoing. So first the transgressor has to acknowledge that something wrong has been done. And then that second component is actually accepting responsibility for it. So not only did something happen that was wrong, but I also did it. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of acknowledging that I was the one that initiated this potentially harmful event for you. The third one is an expression of remorse, so expressing some sort of sorrow or understanding. And I think this sort of, and we could talk about this a little later, but I think this gets at sort of the need for empathy in these types of situations or even in delivery of an apology. And then the fourth one is offering some sort of compensation. So if there's been some sort of loss of time or loss of even a potentially close individual in your life, like offering some sort of compensation for that. And then the fifth and final component is to communicate that this transgression will not happen again. And so I think that's an important and key point because sometimes, you know, you can think of situations in which someone renders an apology but sort of goes back on their word. And it sort of, this last component helps to establish some sort of security and sort of equilibrium in the relationship.
Mm. And do you have a problem with the empathy remorse area of this? Because could it be said that people aren't saying that they're sorry because they don't see the impact that whatever their action has or their words have on somebody else may indicate a lack of empathy in that person?
Yeah, I think part of that expression of remorse is sort of not only acknowledging the responsibility so that I initiated the hurt that happened, but also, like you said, sort of understanding, taking a second to look at things on the other side and see how the victim sort of experienced this harmful event. And so one of the studies that we cite talks about sort of the timing of apologies. And what they find is that in conversations about the harmful event, that if the apology is later in the conversation, it's more likely to be effective. And so, and their rationale for that is that the victims at that point feel that they have a sense of voice and they feel understood by their transgressors. And so I think that may be sort of getting at the empathy piece, which we haven't quite figured out just yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Graham could add a little bit to that. And I think one of the things that we don't understand kind of are people's motivation to apologize. And I think, you know, when some people think about kind of apologies, they think, you know, I'm sorry for being caught. And I think there needs to be a differentiation between when somebody is apologizing because they see that they've hurt somebody and they want to change their behavior versus someone who is apologizing because they just want to kind of stop the conflict or start, just kind of move the relationship forward. And I think kind of the motivation behind kind of what the what's driving the apology is really important for us understanding how apologies can kind of mend relationships.
Do people instinctively know that they need to accept responsibility for their for what's taken place?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that's something that, as a society, I think we need to do a better job in kind of teaching, each other kind of how to interact in relationships. And I think that a lot of times when we've hurt somebody, sometimes when somebody communicates that to us, our first reaction is to be defensive. And I think that's one of the things that gets kind of individuals kind of trapped in kind of these negative patterns of interaction. And I think one of the things that I think we all need to learn is how to kind of be very aware of how our behavior impacts the others who are close to us, especially how our behavior can influence the negative emotions of other people. So I don't think it's necessarily something that comes natural to us. I think it's something that kind of over time and in relationships, we all kind of have to learn and do a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
At least I know I do.
Yeah, I think we all do. And when you say that, I think you said this, that we tend to be better at this with those with whom we are very close?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that true?
Yes, yes. I think the research is, I think, pretty clear that people who are in or perceive their relationships as being a lot closer are more likely to apologize. And so I think that really identifies that kind of relationships that are having difficulty that may need kind of apologies more often may be less likely to occur. And I think one thing that, you know, in terms of kind of public health, I think we can do a better job of kind of helping identify relationships in which people are having difficulty and kind of help them to develop these skills of kind of taking responsibility, being aware of kind of when they need to kind of apologize.
Hmm. Can you really make a promise to somebody that this will never happen again?
Yeah, I think that's an important point. And I think that's sort of where the literature is where we would like to see it go. I think that you can, but I think that there could be times where you may not, where you may break that promise, which could potentially be more hurtful than actually communicating. So maybe instead, the communication could be that I understand and realize, like, how hurtful this was to you, and this is what I'll do to ensure that this thing won't happen. But it may not necessarily guarantee that it won't happen, but potentially, like, that I'll do the work that is necessary to sort of prevented that I may not have done prior to this hurtful thing happening.
Mm. And what kind of work are you referring to?
Well, I think it depends on the transgression. So, for example, if we take there's an overrepresentation in the literature of apologies in our romantic relationships,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them are really dealing with intermarital affairs. And so I think, for example, for that, using that transgression, if it was that one partner for some reason, cheated on their other partner, it could be whatever it was that made it difficult or made it seem like I needed to cheat. Like maybe I would do things to sort of feed that part of me. For example, trying to think of something a little bit more concrete, but if there was, I didn't feel like we had enough quality time together, so I was able to get that from this coworker or from this other person. When I feel that way again, maybe I'll communicate to you that I'm feeling again like we're not having as much quality time, and this is how I felt before I committed that last transgression.
Mm-hmm. Unless your partner has said, sorry, Betty, you're out of here.
Yeah, well, relationships take, I think, it's a two-way street, and it definitely takes work. And I think the way that we sort of have conceptualized apologies, I think, is also sort of a two-way street, and sort of that but there has to be sort of a meeting of the minds
mm-hmm.
For things to really work out how we would like them to.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and we have some email Facebook messages we want to read as well. We're looking at apologies in our close relationships. All of us know, if we've lived any length of time, that you can certainly be emotionally distraught or have physical problems that are related to how you're emotionally distraught when there are certain kinds of actions that take place or language that is given, particularly from somebody who is pretty close to you, be it in a working relationship or in an interpersonal relationship. Our guests have looked at 15 different studies of apologies in our close relationships, romantic, family, platonic as well, and they're talking about what they've found and essentially what makes for an apology that is lasting and that will lift some of that physical and psychological pain for both the transgressor and for the victims. Our guests are Gilbert Parra, a research scientist at the National Research Institute for Child and Family Studies at Boys Town. He's going to begin a faculty position in the Marriage and Family Therapy Program at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln in the fall. Jarrett Lewis is in a PhD program in clinical child psychology at DePaul University, and he worked with Dr. Gilbert Parra while at the University of Memphis, focusing on understanding the influence and function of apologies in the facilitation of forgiveness and the repairing of close relationships. Here's our phone number if you'd like to join this interesting conversation, really an interesting subject matter. Feel free to do that. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. So that's how you can reach us. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, we have a ton of phone calls coming in and a lot of messages. This is obviously a day to learn about an effective way of saying you're sorry. And let's go to phone calls, all right? We'll start with Lou in Madison. Hi, Lou.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead, Lou.
Okay. My question to you is, are there some people who it's impossible for them to apologize, which can cause great problems if the person has transgressed and really abused you and then is unable to apologize? Are there some people who that is a big problem for?
Dr. Parra, you want to start?
Yes. I mean, I think that there are definitely kind of individuals where it is kind of very difficult to kind of produce an apology. And I think an apology takes a lot of courage. And I think people who do apologize and do it because they kind of see that they have hurt somebody, it takes you know, a tremendous amount of courage and able to do that. And I admire people who are able to kind of engage in that conversation and kind of admit wrongdoing and kind of express remorse. And I think that one of the things that we are starting to know, and I think we have a lot more to learn, is that sometimes individuals who, you know, have a difficulty being close with other people have a more difficult time kind of engaging in behaviors that like apologies, and because kind of feeling close doesn't feel kind of super comfortable to them. You know, another reason why it may be difficult for somebody to apologize is because they themselves have been hurt in that relationship. So the relationship may have lots of dynamics of, you know, lots of criticism, lots of withdrawal behavior, and then that relationship may be characterized by just lots of hostility. And one of the things that I think is very powerful about an apology is I think it can soften both members of that relationship and hopefully kind of help them to start the repair process.
Hmm. Jared, do you want to add anything?
I think that was great. I don't think I have anything to add.
Okay. Thank you very much, Lou, unless you had something more.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much for your call. Jan in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I think this is a perfect follow-up to that comment about repairing a relationship. A friend and I were witnesses to two people who were having great difficulty with each other. One person had clearly wronged the other, but it was the injured party who offered an apology. She felt so strongly that she wanted the relationship to continue, And when we asked her about it later, we knew that she had done nothing wrong. She knew she had done nothing wrong. And what she said was the relationship needed somebody to say they were sorry. It could be me. It could be the other. I didn't care. There needed to be an I'm sorry offered. The other person later said they were sorry and offered just the kind of apology you would have hoped for. But this woman's heart was big enough that she saw the relationship as being valuable to the extent that she could offer the apology first.
Yeah, that's quite remarkable.
Wow, sounds like a tremendous person.
Right.
And for me, I think apologies, you know, can be, you know, as we kind of learn more about them, can be thought of as in more terms of kind of interaction. And this, the kind of the situation that you described, it may have kind of facilitated or started a conversation about an event or an experience. And, you know, it may not necessarily have to kind of start with the I'm sorry. It may be just kind of the not just, but kind of the starting of a conversation about a painful or a very difficult situation.
When you talk about one of the steps of the five common components of an apology, and one of them being an offer of compensation, I was wondering, what do you mean by that? What offer can you make? Jarrett?
Yeah, I think, well, there's one study that looks at especially that, and it talks about sort of how people construe themselves. And so it has three different, like, self-controls. And the first one is an independent self-control. And in that one, people, the most important component that they thought was this offer of compensation. And so it's more of a, and I think, and I'll just describe the other two and get back to the answer to your question. But then the second construal was sort of a relative or a relational construal, which means that people think that they're just at a fundamental level sort of connected to other people, and an expression of empathy was most important to them in an apology that would facilitate forgiveness. And then in this last control was the collective self-control, which was more of people identifying more with a group or some sort of social category. And they, what was most important to them was an acknowledgement of some violation of a rule or a norm, and that seems to facilitate forgiveness for them. So sort of building off this study, maybe it has something more to do with how individuals sort of see themselves. And so an offer of compensation, say for an independent construal, one who construes themselves as being more independent, maybe they feel as if your wrong was sort of a direct hit to my independent person or my who I am as a person. And so that offer of compensation needs for you, and that's why we sort of say these components sort of are working together. And so if there's been some loss of time or some loss of even the relationship, like I mentioned earlier, maybe an offer of compensation would be for us to sort of reinvest in the relationship, for us to sort of, we can't make up for lost time, but for us to do things now to sort of make that time a priority. So whatever, and so that's the way that I sort of think of it, as offering compensation is acknowledging the loss that may have occurred or may be associated to this potentially harmful event.
Mm-hmm. Jan, thank you very much for your call. Let's go next to Rich in West Dallas. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you to your guest here. There are a couple things here. One is I hear people apologizing sometimes, and they'll say, I'm sorry if I, you know, did this to you, or I'm sorry if I, and it's almost like that one element, the responsibility really isn't there. It's,
yep.
You know, like if I did something bad, well, then I apologize.
Right.
So it's not a, and I hear that quite a bit in apologies. The other comment I made was there's a saying that I have a pet peeve with these days. It's very common, and it's, you know, somebody can say something outrageous and then get some pushback from people, and they'll just say, well, I'm just saying, you know, I'm just saying that. Like it gives them a free rein to say anything, and I think that that phrase, it's used so often, people don't really realize that it's, you know, you could say, you know, fire in a theater and then say, well, I'm just saying. I mean, that's a ridiculous example, but it just, there's no responsibility, and it's kind of, you know, we wouldn't have to apologize so much if we were a little proactive in some of these things that we do say, and you know, we need to take responsible for our words as well as our
yes.
actions. And the last thing I just wanted to mention is the fellow that said, you know, he was asking about if somebody can't apologize. I didn't hear the feedback from your guests, but I thought right away, well, you know, if you're in that situation and you're still waiting, and you're still allowing that person to empower you as a victim, so mm-hmm. if you can let it go, because you really have no control whether they apologize or not, and whether they can or not, I don't know that, but, you know, at a certain point, you just got to realize that that's out of your control, so let it go, and, you know, and then you'll stop feeling a victim, too.
And that's a really hard thing to do sometimes, isn't it, Rich?
Yes, it's
let
very
that
hard. Over and over the lesson throughout
right.
the day.
Right.
That's a good thing, though.
Yeah. Dr. Parra, we want to start.
No, I mean, I think that I think your observations are very, very keen, and I do think, you know, responsibility and kind of, you know, the transgressor kind of taking responsibility is such an important part of, you know, how effective an apology is going to be. And I think that kind of hits on one of the comments I made earlier about kind of a person's motivation to apologize. You know, what is kind of the driving force? If the driving force behind that apology really isn't about the person's kind of emotional well-being, then it may not kind of be a meaningful apology for that person. You know, and for some apologies that are not particularly severe, that may be the most appropriate kind of way to apologize. But if you, the victim, don't feel that somebody is putting a lot of effort or really doesn't understand how their behavior affects you, I think then the apology is probably going to be a lot less effective. And I think one thing that this literature kind of review highlighted for me was that we really don't understand a whole lot about how the transgressor is aware of how their behavior has affected the victim. And I think that's something that is critically important to kind of the effectiveness of apologies, is does this person, the person who has hurt me, truly understand how their behavior has impacted me in
right.
my life. And I think that's such an important part of kind of what an effective apology is.
Yeah. We've edited these because it was a long comment.
Yeah.
For those who are interested, go to our Facebook page. Jim on Facebook brought up the distinction between, I acknowledge that I've failed to live up to my principles and this has affected you type of apology from the please don't be upset with me apology. He also identified the genuinely empathic, I'm sorry you're hurting type of apology.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a very important distinction and one that the scientific literature actually doesn't make. So I think that, you know, I think that's a fantastic observation.
Mm-hmm. I do too. Rich, thank you. Marilyn in Brown Deer, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for taking my call. A while back in time, I was raped by my soon-to-be ex-husband. I was attacked in the night. And there's just been no apology ever. And why did you do this? The questions I came out with all the time. But, you know, he couldn't. He, not diagnosed by me, we had a child who was seeing two therapists. And they said that my ex was a narcissist. And anyway, he's never apologized, and we got divorced in the mid-90s, and here it is, this date, and nothing's been ever said. But he had friends that were definitely in the law, and he thought he was above the law because he hung around with them, too. And I think that added to the effect of it all is how, just like in war, to end up hurting someone, you know what I'm getting at?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a means to degrade, and I wasn't supposed to be this person to be degraded. I mean, I'm the mother of a child, and what's wrong with this situation?
Dr. Parra.
Well, I'm so sorry that you kind of went through that experience. It sounds like just a horrific thing, and yeah. And in some situations, I'm not sure, you know, apology would be enough. And it sounds like, you know, his actions were, you know, unforgivable in many ways. And it sounds like he just, you know, put you through such a traumatic experience, and you know, more than likely your son as well.
Yeah. I guess there are times when you just walk away from it, right? The physical damage is such that there is no amount of apology that will do.
Yeah, and I think we're starting to learn more about forgiveness. And I think over the last 15 years, there's been a huge increase in our understanding. And I think there are many things who people who have experienced horrific things can go through a process of forgiveness without an apology. And it's forgiveness not to forgive, not to kind of exonerate or not to condone another individual's behavior, but it's something that we do for ourselves. And so a lot of individuals who have had really painful experiences, you know, one thing that they can do, and it's really, really hard, and earlier I kind of mentioned kind of, you know, a lot of courage, you know, the courage to kind of forgive somebody who's harmed you can be, you know, it's very, very difficult, but that's something that can be helpful for somebody who's kind of carrying around a lot of pain and hurt
right.
because of another person's behavior.
Yeah. Thank you, Marilyn, for calling. I hope your days ahead are better, more peaceful. Carol in Kenosha, hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Carol.
I'm afraid this is going to be a little redundant from what your guest has just said.
Oh.
There's a wonderful book, uh-huh. How Can I Forgive You? The Courage to Forgive, uh-huh. The Freedom Not to, by Janice Abrams Spring, Ph.D.
Uh-huh.
This wonderful book helped me through the process of getting to the serenity of acceptance,
mm-hmm.
as we hear and know in the serenity prayer,
mm-hmm.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
mm-hmm.
the courage to change those that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. There's a short passage here that I'd like to read from this book that just says it all. Acceptance is not a failure to forgive, but an equally powerful way of healing an injury when the person who hurt you fails to participate in the process. Acceptance is not an inferior, immature, or morally deficient reaction. It is a wise and proactive alternative. You can't draw blood from a stone, but you can accept an unrepentant offender.
Thank you. And what was the full name of the book, please, Carol?
How Can I Forgive You?
How Can I Forgive You? Okay, thank
the
you.
The Courage to Forgive, the Freedom Not to. Janice Abrams Spring.
Janice Abrams Spring. Thank you so much. Jarrett, you want to respond to this one?
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I think, you know, I think that's really sort of the motivation behind like this work and why this work is so important is so that people, you know, experience some very hurtful and potentially traumatic experiences. And there's something about sort of knowing, especially that someone else may have intentionally harmed you or even maybe not, but just sort of someone, sort of an interpersonal component that makes it a little more difficult than, say, if it was just something bad like a car accident that may happen and be out of your control. And so I think that it's important for us not to only talk about, like, when apologies happen, but also in those instances when they don't occur, what are ways that we can be more proactive in making sure that we accept what's happened and sort of move on in the way that's healthy for us. So thanks for sharing.
Yes. Joan in Elkhorn, hi.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hey.
If you have trust in the offender that he hasn't done things before and said, I'm sorry, and then continued doing them,
mm-hmm.
If you have trust in the offender, which is like money in the bank in a way,
mm-hmm.
Then the apology would be easier, wouldn't it? And probably quickly forgiven, too,
mm-hmm.
because you need to be trusting,
mm-hmm.
don't you think?
Yes, yes, and I think that's one of the really kind of difficult things about transgressions or emotional injuries is that one of the things that they can really do is start to erode the trust in relationship. So you could have a kind of a very trusting relationship, and when one of these transgressions occurs, it can really start to have the victim question, you know, how committed is the other person, how much can I trust them? And that's why I think kind of apologies and kind of good apologies are so important, is they kind of can help to restore that trust when that kind of trust has been broken.
Thank you, Joan, so much. Everybody's so insightful. We're going to continue our conversation. We're talking about apologies in close relationships, a review of theory and research. It's a piece in the Journal of Family Theory and Review, and our guests this hour have studied and written about 15 important studies on apologies in close romantic, familial, and platonic relationships. There are five common components emerging as a good apology. An acknowledgement of wrongdoing, the acceptance of responsibility, an expression of remorse, an offer of compensation, communication not to commit the transgression again in the future. And we're welcoming your many phone calls. This has really struck a nerve, this conversation. Our number is 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. We welcome your words of wisdom on our Facebook page as well, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Chuck posted on Facebook, I wonder if the guests know about and what you think of John Gottman's work on the broader topic of repair attempts in marriages. He's gathered data about successful and unsuccessful repair attempts from observations of couples talking with each other. Dr. Parra?
Yes, I think John Gottman is, I think, one of the eminent scholars in this area, and I think he's done a tremendous amount of kind of teaching us about, you know, what works and doesn't work in romantic relationships. And, you know, I probably try to read some of his stuff at least once a week, given his older work, because he's just very inspiring in kind of what he writes about. And he offers many workshops on kind of couple relationships and how to kind of enhance your satisfaction or couple satisfaction in relationships. He's also written a whole lot about the parent-child relationship and how parents can become more attuned to their kids. And he kind of coined a construct called emotion coaching as how we as parents can kind of help our kids develop emotionally by being very attuned to kind of their emotional experiences. And I think that it relates a lot to kind of forgiveness and apologies, because he kind of is attuned to kind of kids' emotions. And I think one of the things that are really important about kind of effective apologies, as I mentioned a few times, is how attuned the transgressor is to kind of the victim's emotional reaction to the event.
Let's go to Bob next in Mequon. Hi, Bob.
Hi, I was just wondering if the guest had any tips or ideas that I might be able to employ to help a couple I know to get past a situation that's been going on for years. Mm-hmm. Neither of them is capable of apology. Mm-hmm. Neither of them is capable of admitting wrong. And they can argue in the most incredible vitriolic fashion that I've ever witnessed. Uh-huh. What can you do to help people get past that, to see what they're doing to each other and to themselves, really, in the long run?
That's a very difficult situation. I'm sure as somebody who cares, sounds like you care about both those individuals, kind of hard to see them kind of go through this. And I think my best recommendation would be to kind of see if they're willing to see a couples therapist, because I think it sounds like their relationship is so ingrained that, and their patterns of interaction are so ingrained, it's going to be hard for someone who's close to them to kind of try to kind of stop that pattern. And my guess would be that, you know, something has happened in their relationship that has kind of caused incredible pain for either one or both of them. And, you know, my experience, I think some of the most significant kind of relationship conflicts, you know, when you see relationships having kind of lots of hostility, you know, that many of those, the foundation of that conflict is around kind of hurtful events or hurtful experiences. And I think couples therapists can do a really good job of kind of helping couples who are stuck in that way.
Thank you, Bob, so much for your call. And will you go to Mary next in Brookfield? Hi, Mary.
Hi. My question is, when you have a family member that has children and also is in an intimate relationship and that person has Asperger's, and they do not understand other people's feelings and feel defensive and do not do apologies, in fact, even even the very, you hurt my feelings, is responded by, no, I didn't. And no need for apology does not concern himself with other people's feelings. And, you know, how do you handle that situation, especially when there's, you know, even adult children involved?
I think that is a fantastic question and a very difficult question, and one that actually is kind of outside of my kind of area of expertise. And I think individuals who are experiencing Asperger's symptoms, I think, you know, all, definitely I think could benefit from apologies. And I think that we know very little about kind of what those could look like and how we can kind of facilitate kind of those being most helpful. So I think it's a fantastic question. I think something that we really need to learn or know a whole lot more about.
Do you think that there is a vast body of literature on all of what we're talking about this hour? It's obvious that so many people are clued into what we're talking about and have experienced this. Are both of you writing a book together, or are there books out there that will be helpful?
I think there are... I think there are a couple of people mentioned some good books on forgiveness. I think those are very helpful. I think there's been a recent book. It's for therapists, but I think it's one of the best books I ever read by Guy Diamond, and he kind of focuses on how family members can repair attachment relationships or relationships, especially when a parent has caused hurt to their kid. And I think that is one of the better books that I've kind of seen recently on kind of helping family members kind of repair relationships.
Okay. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and the email is talk@WPR.org. Dawn wrote on Facebook, saying I'm sorry and will you please forgive me are the most powerful words in a relationship. We haven't asked for people when they're giving their apology to ask for forgiveness. Is that an important thing to do, Jarrett?
I think, you know, building off the literature that we sort of summarized, I think it's actually, as we're talking about remorse and empathy, that I think tends to be more, at least influences more whether or not an apology will be effective or not. So there's only sort of one study that we could find that really has developed some sort of theory around apologies, and so they provide us with sort of three categories of components that are sort of that are necessary for effective apologies. And one that they mention is affirmation. And so with each of these components, there's sort of a continuum of self-focus and then self-other focus. And I think sometimes the language that we use, it sort of is somewhere on that continuum between whether or not we're focused on relieving some sort of stress or some sort of distress we have for having wronged someone, or are we really trying to understand and empathize with that person, which would be the self-other focus. And so the two ends of the anchors that affirmation continuum are sort of admission, so admitting that I'm wrong, and then acknowledgement, which goes beyond just admitting that I'm wrong, but also accepting responsibility and also validating the hurt that the victim may have felt. So I think saying I'm sorry, it depending on the severity of the transgression, could be appropriate or could not be appropriate. But I think what's most important is sort of understanding, can you validate the hurt that this person is experiencing and the consequences that may come from it? I think that really contributes to whether or not apologies are effective or not.
Mm-hmm. Mary, thank you very much for your call. Margaret in Racine, hi.
Hi. I am interested in your guest comment on two things. One, the power of apologizing for small things as opposed to egregious offenses on a kind of everyday basis.
Okay.
And also the power of actually voicing an apology as opposed to simply assuming the other person knows how they feel. And I'll take their comments off the air.
Thanks, Margaret.
Okay. I'll answer the second one. I actually didn't hear the kind of first part of that question, but I do think it can be a very powerful piece for kind of the relationship as a whole when somebody's able to kind of voice apologies, especially when the transgression is more severe. I think for some less severe apologies, some couples have dynamics where the apology doesn't need to be said. It could be a look. It could be, you know, an extra special dinner. It could be, you know, a bouquet of flowers. It could be something like that that communicates, I'm sorry. in the same way that, words can communicate. So I think for lots of couples and for lots of relationships, there may not necessarily need to be that verbalization. But I do think for kind of more severe transgressions, that verbalization is really helpful in kind of facilitating or starting the process of kind of reconnection and moving toward forgiveness.
And Margaret brought up the, maybe you can get into the habit of all of this if you say you're sorry for smaller things so that you're not just saving it all up for the major transgressions.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's an excellent point. I think related to that, I think one thing that's really kind of emerging in the literature is the importance of gratitude in relationships. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we focus on kind of the kind of transgressions, the negative part, and I think that is really important. But I think getting to the kind of day-to-day kind of helping to kind of maintain a positive relationship, there's research now that's showing that couples who are able to kind of express gratitude are a lot more satisfied mm-hmm. and to kind of have a lot more, lot less conflict. And I think that's something that doesn't get a lot of attention, mm-hmm. but the more we're able to say thank you seems to be really helpful in good relationships.
Absolutely. Can't say enough about that. That's good. We go next to Joan in Elkhorn. Oh, Joan, I'm sorry. We go to Daniel in, please call back, Joan.
Hello.
Hi, Daniel. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had I'm in a relationship, where a lady, I trusted her in my house, and she stole checks. She went around and she cashed over $4,000 of checks.
Wow.
And then, you know, yeah, she apologized, but it's hard to forgive her because she refuses to pay it back. Because, and she says, well, I never got convicted, so technically I really don't owe you the money. I mean, how do you just, you know, I still have friends with her to a point, but I don't trust her no more.
Dr. Parra.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it also sounds like a very difficult situation and a very hurtful situation. And this, I think, actually hits on something that's really important and that we haven't talked a lot about is how to receive an apology. And it sounds like, you know, she apologized for these egregious behaviors, but it sounds like from your perspective that it's not something that you can forgive. So the apology may be kind of important, but you may make a decision kind of based on, you know, lots of different circumstances that this may not be the healthiest relationship for you to be in. And just because somebody apologized doesn't necessarily mean reconciliation is kind of the best step of moving forward. In some kind of relationships, it may be, yes, I accept your apology, but I don't think I could ever be in a relationship with you or the same type of relationship with you because of the way that you hurt me. So just because there's an apology doesn't necessarily, number one, need it has to be accepted, and number two, doesn't necessarily mean that that relationship has to be restored to the level it was. And I think that's something really important. When somebody continues to kind of hurt us, one of the things that we may kind of ask ourselves is this a healthy relationship for me to be in? And when somebody continues to engage in the same behaviors over and over again, I think we have to ask ourselves, well, maybe this isn't the best relationship. Yes, this person has apologized. Yes, they understand how they're hurting me, but I just can't keep putting myself in the situation over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you both so much for being with us. We're obviously onto a topic here that has had a lot of response from our listeners, so it's an important one, and I thank you both for being with us. Jarrett, thank you so much. Jarrett Lewis, thanks. And Gilbert Parra, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah, our great pleasure. And thanks to all of you for listening and for calling in today. Just a reminder, tomorrow during this hour, it should be a really interesting hour. We're going to be talking about gaining wisdom as you grow older. Individual stories from older Americans teaching vital life lessons to enhance our later years. Thanks to KP Whaley. For producing this program. Thank you, KP, and thanks to Jennifer Dargan for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Thanks for listening. Great conversations ahead.
I didn't mean to ever be mean to you. If I didn't care, I wouldn't feel like I do.